Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's For Women. You are not 9 to 5 and neither are we. Conveniently open online 365 days per year, 24 hours per day.
Now, no faffing around this morning because we have our guest live in studio and he's ready to go. He's best-selling Cork author, Graham Norton. Good morning.
Hello.
We thought we'd bring you in straight away. We don't want you hanging around the radio centre looking at the cut of the place.
it's lovely. Previously loved.
Pre-loved RTE Radio Centre. It is a listed building, of course.
Of course.
I mean, we're not sure what list it's on exactly, but it's good. We can't have someone so high up. In fact, Richard Osman, thankfully, is going to talk to us on the phone later, so he's done us the dignity. He won't see the place.
So. Oh, wow.
Not later today, in a couple of weeks.
Oh, I see. I thought you were. We were both on.
That's a relief. No. It's all about you. It's all about you today. 51551, as I say, for the text. Now, Graham, you're launching your new novel. It's your fifth novel, in fact.
Which is... Even I, really? Stop typing. It is my fifth novel. And it seems to be landing in a slightly different way, this one, Frankie. People seem to be liking it. So we'll see how it goes. It's out today.
Today. This is the launch.
I think it was supposed to be out tomorrow, but the excitement was such... that it's out today.
Bookshops kind of do that, don't they? They just seem to rip open the cardboard box as if they hear an interview somewhere. Yeah.
So it was supposed to be out, I think, tomorrow. But like everyone's selling it already, so, they go, look. Let's just say it.
No embargoes there. So it's called Frankie. It's not the cozy crime fiction that readers might know you for up to date. In fact, it's a very sprawling epic drama. With lots of laughter, tears, there's cooking in it, lesbians.
Yes.
Stuffy Protestants as well. it's quite a risk, isn't it?
I know them so well.
More of that later. It is I think you've taken a bit of a risk here.
I suppose. I mean, the thing is, I've always loved plot as a reader, as a writer. I really like plot. I like to know why I'm reading a book. Mm. And then with this one, I just thought, the original plot, the one that we all... live is the story of a life. So that's what this book is. It's the story of a life. This woman, Frankie, when we meet her, she's old, she's living in East London, and she hurts her leg, and she has a young carer, an Irish guy called Damien, and they're from the same little bit of West Cork. Mm-hmm. And that kind of sparks a conversation, and she starts telling the story of her life, and you go back to West Cork in the late 40s, and then it goes all the way through London in the 60s, New York in the 70s and 80s, and we find out what happened to Frankie.
Yeah, because I gather the three places you know the best on earth
are in this book.
West Cork, London, New York, and lo and behold, Frankie.
Yeah. Wow, Frankie ended up in those places. Yeah, Vietnam didn't appeal. She didn't go there.
Although you didn't actually go, you both escaped West Cork, but is it San Francisco? Is that where you first go, or did you go to New York?
Where did I go? Yes, I went to New York, and it was too frightening. I got there, I was on a J-1 visa, and we all arrived, and we were staying in some kind of YMCA or something, and the morning after we arrived, they took us into a room and gave us a talk on how not to be killed in New York. And I still... Seriously, it is still in my heart, that talk. Yeah. So I still do it now. Like, don't walk next to the wall, walk next to the curb, don't look up.
You don't do this now still?
Well, I still wouldn't look up very much because it makes you look like a tourist. And, yes, you know, okay. You're an easy, you're a soft touch.
Yeah. And what era are you in New York?
What?
What era are you in New
York? Oh, that would have been 1983, I think, 1983.
Which, and that era features.
Yes, yeah.
But back to Frankie, because as I say...
You're very good.
The other three places, we better do that. Publicist just somewhere lurking nearby.
The book!
Frances Howe, she later becomes Frankie.
Yeah.
Not a spoiler. At the start, she's a young girl. She's a Protestant in West Cork. And she's surrounded by a very suffocating shower. Surely not your experience.
No, in fact, that isn't really my experience. Yeah. But I wanted her... I had an idea of just marrying. Actually, that's a plot spoiler, so I won't say anything. But anyway,
we can't even talk about the plot.
No, we can't. So much of it. But that I hadn't really dealt with Protestants before in my books. They were all sort of like light Catholics. I didn't really do much about anything. Like a priest might walk by, but that was the only thing you saw in my books before.
Studiously ignored them.
Because I didn't feel I could really talk about that. So in this one, I thought, actually, I do know about Protestants, so let's shove some of them in. So that's what I did.
They don't have many redeeming qualities, except for Frankie, of course.
Yeah, Frankie's herself, lovely. And her friend Nora Dean.
The
Deans
lovely.
Are nice.
Yeah, we love Nora. Because, I mean, it's Ireland 1950. Happiness was not to be trusted. That's the world that she is born into.
Yeah.
And bad things happen to Frankie.
Yeah, I mean, as a child, you know, she loses her parents and then she lives with relatives who sort of do their best, but they shouldn't have had children. And they I don't think they particularly wanted children, but they ended up with Frankie or Francis. And it was a grim old childhood. But she had good friends and they kind of continually rescue her. That kind of is a motif throughout the book.
Okay, yes. Sometimes you don't notice that as a reader. Yeah, she's been rescued by the nice people.
Yeah.
In her life. Because it is a plot spoiler. By the way, West Cork section would have been a novel on its own, all the things that happened to her there at the weekend.
If I was a better writer, it probably would be. But I'm always in a bit of a rush. I'm always in a bit of a rush to tell stories. So I come up with the idea and then it's like, oh, that's a page. Sometimes I'm reading a book and kind of go, wow. Like there's a whole book here.
Gone.
And less happens in this book than happens in like
quite
a chapter
a lot,
of mine.
Quite a lot. But it would be a spoiler to say what exactly. I love the digs, by the way. They could only come from an Irish writer where you, Frankie notices the English Protestants who come to the service in Cork and the way they're dressed.
Yeah. Well, that's from Bandon. I do remember that. Like you'd notice the English. They were just different.
Only people who didn't have to be up to milk the cows could have put such care into their appearance.
I know.
Whew.
I remember going to a funeral once in Bandon and there was a woman wearing sunglasses. Well, we knew she wasn't from Bandon.
The glamour startled the place for too long. But anyway, things happen to... we root for Frankie throughout this story, don't we?
Hopefully.
And she goes, unlike you, she goes to London first and she falls into the wealthy, catty, lesbian elite of London. Is
yeah.
That was a curious place.
Yeah, it is. That was slightly unexpected. I wanted her to go there. And that's what happened. That's what happened to her. I feel like this book, lots happens. But I think the difference with this book is that I kind of lean more into emotion than into plot. You know, there is a story and hopefully it's a page turny and you keep going. You want to know what happens next. But I think there's more emotion in this book than I've allowed myself. Or I guess before this, I didn't have the confidence to do that. I kind of thought, I'm not sure I can do that.
It takes five novels.
Apparently.
Even for Graham Norton.
The clue phone is ringing. Finally we're here.
Because is it your third novel before you put in a major gay character?
Yeah. Look, what happened was when I started writing, you know, the nice thing about being Graham Norton man off the television is you get a book deal, which writers are now throwing a radio across the room. Why, you Norton. But then, you know, I feel like reading is such a kind of intimate entertainment. It's the thing where you're not sitting with other people, you're not seeing it through anybody else's eyes. It's just you and the book, and hopefully you get lost in that world. And so I didn't want the name on the cover of the book to be reading over people's shoulders. So I tried to extricate myself from the books as much as I could. So, you know, it wasn't show business, it wasn't telly, there were no gay characters, they're not funny books. And that was all deliberate. That was all just kind of trying to remove any idea of Graham Norton from these books.
Yeah. I thought it was curious when Holding first came out, the sort of reading, writing community, whatever you call them in Ireland, sort of cheered and went, oh, it's about us. He still remembers West Cork. He's there all the time. Whereas imagine British readers are probably a little bit confused at the start.
I don't know. I mean, it's... I suppose, yes. I think certainly the publishers were slightly confused. I think when they signed me, I think they sent out press releases saying, you know, Graham Norton's hilarious new novel will be out in September. And then they started getting bits of it and kind of went, Graham Norton's darkly comic book will be out in September.
Really,
and then they just dropped any mention of funny and went, yeah, Graham Norton's book's out in September. See if you like it. There you go. It's set in Ireland. It's quite depressing.
And I love how you don't bother explaining to an outside audience who the guards are and, you know, and any of these Irishisms.
Well, I do. If you notice, like, I'll say they're the guards and da da da, but then I will mention somewhere the word police. Yeah. So, you know.
I think every writer ever is going, damn the Gardaí for international sales. We can't even translate it. Guardians of the Peace? Makes no sense. So there are some explainers. Okay, I was giving you
a little bit. Yeah.
But you have, you keep calling yourself a hobby writer every time you have a novel out. Surely at this stage.
I think it's different, isn't it? Like, if someone's an actual writer, I think it's their first impulse. It's the thing they wanted to do. It's the thing they wanted to be. Mm. And it was something that I did want to be, but not enough to actually do it. So I went off gallivanting and found easier ways to show off than write. You know, writing's a very slow burn show off.
It's hard work.
It takes a long time before somebody sees you showing off. So I just was standing on stage, and that seemed much quicker and easier. And so it was only really when I was in my 50s that I kind of thought, I've got the time and the patience to sit at a desk for long enough to write a book now. So I did it. So I think when I talk to actual writers, full-time writers, you know, they're just different. You know, I remember I bumped into Zadie Smith at the West Cork Literary Festival, and I was saying I was working on a book, and she was going, oh, I can't write in the summer. And I'm thinking, aren't I marvellous? Look at me. I'm writing in the summer, and even Zadie Smith can't do that. And then I went, oh, that's because it's her job, and she's on holidays. It is my holiday job. So it's not that I don't take the book seriously. I do. This book is as good as I could make it. I did put the hours in, but equally, a writer, a full time writer, is just they're just different. They're a different breed.
Writers have told me this story about you with the Irish Book Awards a number of years ago. And I think you'd won the year before, Crime Novel of the Year, whatever it is. And then the second year comes and they're looking around going, Graham Norton isn't here, so he obviously hasn't won. Thank God. And I think halfway through the award ceremony, you arrive in and they all go, oh, he's just showed up for his category and he's won the award. He's come late. They know, they've told him. And that night you didn't actually win. And I believe this is the story I'm telling you. The writers have told me, and writers are terrible liars. But they said that you did know that you weren't going to win, and your plane was just late getting
there.
Yeah,
no, my plane was late. I remember.
It's a true story.
Yeah, it is a true story. I then I remember I had to get changed at Heathrow into a tux and sit on the Aer Lingus in my dinner tux. Wow, he takes travel so seriously. He's so old school.
Like that all the time.
Yeah. Wow.
You've got real cutlery now. Yeah.
This for a sandwich. And then I had to dash to the Book Awards. And you must have been at the Book Awards.
I've never written a book.
No, oh, right. No. But I thought you might have invited you. It's the great and the
good. The odd time. Miriam owns the Book Awards.
Yeah. Wait, you know that thing where, you know, I've met drunk people in my time. You know, I've been around drunk people. I have never seen drunker people than the Irish Book Awards. It is unbelievable. And it's really, and it's people you know that in the daytime, they're probably nice.
Yeah. Very academic.
Yeah. And about 5 o'clock when they were putting that frock on, they were just a lovely human being.
It goes to hell.
And by the time it's 9 o'clock, they're just a snarling animal.
That's writers and awards. But despite all of that, they were kind of, I think that was your welcome into the community of, he takes writing this seriously.
That I'm a loser.
Crossover here.
Now we like him.
Lost the award and now he's one of us. Very good. To New York, by the way. And our friend Frankie is now in New York. This is a kind of a fun era in the book. I think readers are going to really enjoy this part of it because she's kind of finding her way here, isn't she?
It's suddenly when things start going her way.
Falls in love.
Yeah, she falls in love and she early in the book, we discover she's kind of got a love of cooking and a bit of a knack for it. And then she finds an outlet in New York and falls in love. And normally in my books, there are relationships, but they're always awful. They're always very unhappy, miserable relationships. Finally, a good, you know, it's a happy. I mean, the thing is, you can't have too many happy relationships in books because it's quite dull. You know, actually, you need a bit of, you know, grit in the oyster.
Conflict, drama.
Yeah, there's that
one. Very good. So, it's, and he's a very charming Italian-American and he's arty.
And kind of while they're together, he finds success and she finds success and it's all going well. The end.
And that's all that happens.
Yeah, that's all that happens. It's really good.
There's loads of intricate detail about cooking and her her chef work here. She's an exceptional cook or chef.
Yeah.
Are you very good in the kitchen? It seems to be so detailed.
Not really. I mean, I've worked in restaurants. I worked in restaurants for a long time.
8 years, I believe.
Well done, yes, you, yes. Mr. Research. Oh, I'm very good on it. So I think that's where some of that authentic stuff comes from, is just working in restaurants and knowing what goes on and, you know, and seeing how kitchens work. So, I mean, I had no interest in going in there. Just from the door,
like what comes out.
I could see what they were doing as they screamed at each other.
You must be lovely to serve staff as a result of your years of toil.
Oh, yes, now, lovely, yes, lovely to waiting staff.
when there were colleagues, no.
Yeah, and also, no, I thought you meant like customers. And I was like, no, I was terrible to customers.
Were you?
Well, I started off being good because I was, you know, this young little Irish boy in London serving people. And I was so friendly and nice. And I would do that thing, you know, I'd go up to them after the meal and go, and would you like dessert? And they'd go, no, thank you. And I go, are you sure? Like I was doing some American hard sell. I was just being polite. That's what you do. People don't mean no. People don't mean no. So you go, are you sure you don't want dessert? And people would look at me like, back off. Yeah, we just told you we don't want dessert. But by the end of 8 years, I needed to be taken away. I was just, I was vicious by the end. I'd lost all patience with people.
But you found your creativity there.
Mother Teresa routine. Yes, the Mother Teresa. Well, that's the problem, is you say Mother Teresa routine. It was putting a tea towel on my head. That was the routine. I turned that into an hour-long show. I mean, it was funny.
No recording
It was
exists.
Funny for as long as it took to put a tea towel on my head and go, oh, look, I'm Mother Teresa. Hilarious.
This was Graham Norton exploiting a Catholic idol. Now that we look back on it.
Yes, I know. I kept very quiet about my Protestant past
yes,
then.
Yes, you did. There was no mention of it then. And by the way, this reminds me, because you say you only became a writer laterally, but you're involved in comedy. You obviously would have been a writer.
Yes, I mean, I wrote stuff then for myself. And I think when I started in comedy, it was very written, you know, because I didn't want to think of myself as a stand-up. So it was all, you know, Mother Teresa was like a monologue, theater. Really. Okay. And then I would write little skits for myself and character monologues and stuff. And it took me about 3 or 4 years of going to Edinburgh before admitting that actually this is just me rambling on, so yeah. I might as well just say I'm a stand-up. And the minute I said I was a stand-up and started just doing a stand-up show, that's when things started happening for me, because that's when people knew what to do with me, because they went, oh, he can do presenting, he can do this, he can do that. And it was just, it was as it seemed as simple as changing the label on the tin.
I'm a stand-up.
Yeah, I'm a stand-up. And then they go, oh, right, fine, we know what
another
we are.
Coming out.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Okay. And that's obviously how you get recruited into Father Ted, I presume, because they were recruiting every good stand-up.
Yeah, that was, I think, my age. I got a new agent at the Edinburgh Festival, and she also represented Graham and Arthur. And so she went, I've just taken on a new Irish client. Surely there's something. Surely there's something for him. And you don't turn down my agent easily. So I think they went, oh, dear God, we better have him. So that's how I ended up in Father Ted.
Father Ted, as you know, has fanatics.
Oh, yeah.
So they were already in touch with us this morning. And this person said, we're always very impressed by Graham's acting ability in Father Ted. He really did excel. I love the episode with the Irish dancing in the caravan. It's a classic. So what was it like on the set of Father Ted? Was it Channel 4 or Dermot Morgan that spotted your talent? Well, we've just heard the story. The crack must have been crazy with Dermot Morgan, Ard Lohanlon, Frank Pauline. And that's from Jimmy in Dundalk.
Well, Jimmy, the odd thing was that, so, you know, the four main people, like, they're there every week. And they could have just been a little clique if they'd wanted to be.
Yeah.
Because, you know, blow-ins for one episode, why bother? Mm. They couldn't have been nicer. So open and friendly. And then that caravan, they'd filmed all the stuff in Ireland first. So I never filmed in Ireland. So the only people who filmed in Ireland and in the studio were the four main characters.
Right.
Everyone else either was on location or in London. Yeah. So, but what they did was they brought the real caravan.
Oh, did they?
They brought the actual caravan they'd filmed in the West of Ireland over to London. That's what we were in. And I remember, so we get in, we're doing it, they're filming through the end window, and we do our Irish dancing. And so keen were we on our Irish dancing, we buckled the floor. And the door would no longer open. So myself and the youth group and Ardlan Dermot, we all had to climb out the end window, of the caravan.
Oh, God, great memories.
I know, it was one of my first jobs. And it was such a happy time. You know, it made you kind of think, oh, this is great. I love this industry.
Because we kind of forget, looking back at it, that we didn't know who you were at the time we would have first seen those. You were only in three episodes.
Yeah, nobody would have known. There was no reason to know who I was.
And from there, do you end up at Channel 4 presenting pretty soon afterwards?
At the same time as I did Father Ted. In fact, when I was rehearsing Father Ted, I got my first presenting job, which was a thing called Carnal Knowledge. It was a middle of the night filthy version of Mr. and Mrs. where they had to kind of draw things on a chalkboard. And I did it with my friend Maria McCurlin. And from that, I got little gigs on Channel 5, which was brand new then.
Yeah.
And so they had lots of slots, but no money. So anybody well known wouldn't go there. So it was a great opportunity to go. No one was watching, really. So you got to kind of learn your job on telly, but nobody seeing you do it.
Wow.
And then from that, I got the gig on Channel 4.
And it was pure filth as well.
Oh, pure filth.
We also forget that. They really washed you nicely in the BBC, didn't they? To this wholesome brand.
Well, it's not just, I think, isn't it weird? I look back, because I'm doing a book tour in the UK, and so I've been looking at old clips of the show. And I thought I'd show lots of old clips and this, but I can't watch them. They're just unbearable. So, and I think it was a different time. You know, it was 1998, so it was a long time ago.
Yeah.
But also, you know, I was a different person. It was me in my 30s. And I guess because I'd come from a stand-up background, I was kind of fearless. You know, if a 60-year-old man wandered round an audience with a microphone asking them for, you know, their sexual anecdotes, it would just be creepy and horrible. It would just be like, why is that old man perving on those people? So, I couldn't do it now.
That was so Graham Norton. That was
so Graham Norton, yeah.
And so the BBC, you've had a strange kind of trajectory, haven't you? Because they kind of BBC had to steal you from Channel 4 because you were killing their ratings, something like that.
I think the word is poached.
They stole you.
Another culinary metaphor.
And you wouldn't have ended up on that chat show had Jonathan Ross not exploded that time, is it?
But it was a weird thing. I had the chat show already. And we'd start on BBC Two, then we'd move to BBC One, and we were on a Monday. So I had my chat show on a Monday, and then Jonathan had the Friday.
Right.
Okay. So the thing that wouldn't have happened was the move to Friday, but it was all happening already.
It's funny how our memories are not very reliable. 515513. We're going to take a quick break, and we will come back. We will return to Frankie in her adventures in New York, and it gets a little bit sad, but it'll be otherwise jolly. Back, Graham Norton is distracting me through the ad break when I'm trying to read the messages.
Sorry.
I've got a lovely one here from Belinda McKeown. I was in the audience in West Cork at the Literary Festival in 2015. The night Graham said he was writing a novel. Myself and every other novelist in the room, in the crowd, fondly rolled our eyes. And then I read it, and I thought, that bastard. He could actually write a novel. He handles plot and characterization really, really well. Hate to love him, Belinda McKeown, who's author of Solace and Tender.
Oh, wow.
So you've got writing fans. The writing community have really welcomed you in.
They have, really.
What a talent, and so down to earth. Ask him to tell the story of when his mam visited him in Dublin the first time. It's brilliant, says Pat. No idea.
I don't know what that story is. My mother,
London for the first time. Does your mum go to London?
I don't know. My mother. So, I mean,
Pat, you can tell us that story. Yeah. That you've imagined.
Yeah. Do you know what? She's probably mixing me up with somebody else.
Who could she possibly mix you up
and with? I'm like, that's not my mother.
Tell us who you're mixing
that's
up
that's not my mother.
Your mother, by the way, alive and well.
She is as far as I know. I haven't spoken to her today.
Oh, God, right.
but she's down in West Cork. I delivered her back to her house yesterday.
Oh, lovely.
Because I was down in West Cork and she was down staying with us.
Because I presume you don't come to Dublin very often at all.
Do you know what's weird is I don't know Dublin very well. Okay. Like, I was born here, but we moved when I was two. So
no memories.
So when I come back, I'm like a tourist. So I have a very
you
nice
can time. Look up.
Well, yeah, no, I can look up. But also,
nothing to look up.
But then I'm never really here for very long. So the time I did a thing for Amazon last year and I was here for a week. So I got to kind of mooch around and go to galleries and do all the stuff I never get to do. So it was very nice. Yeah.
What did you enjoy about Dublin on that visit?
The Hugh Lane was very good.
The Hugh Lane Gallery. Yeah, yes, a lovely place. Yeah. Was it Andy Warhol at the time? Or no, that would have.
No, that wasn't there. But actually, the Hugh Lane Gallery kind of ties into the book, Frankie, because there was a thing.
What
where,
a lovely
well, no,
segue back.
Well,
into
no, just seriously, you brought it up. It was. I was in there and I. Saw this painting and I thought, oh, that's really nice. And I, you know, that way you go over to see who painted that. And it was a woman called Grace Henry. And I thought, oh, that's very nice. I've never heard of her. And then I read the little blurb and it was Paul Henry's wife.
Right.
And I just thought that happens so often in history.
Yeah.
Where the women, although just as talented, kind of vanish. Did you read Christine Dwyer Hickey wrote a really good book called The Narrow Land? Do you know that?
No.
It's about Edward Hopper and his wife.
Okay. Right.
And again, Edward Hopper's wife, possibly more well known when they got together. Yeah. She introduced him to, you know, galleries and things. And then she just sat in her hands and was Mrs. Hopper for the rest of her life. And
this happens to
Frankie. And that kind of
happens
to Frankie in this book.
And she ends up running a restaurant, essentially.
Yes.
And she's lots of lovely young people working for her. And then the AIDS crisis hits New York. Now, initially, I'm thinking, oh, no, here's another gay novelist writing about the AIDS crisis. But you really got there's a very, very sad and poignant moment in the novel.
There's a few sad moments. And it's, I think, because you're seeing it through the eyes of Frankie, it's slightly different because she was slightly on the outside of it. But, you know, the restaurant scene is, you know, you don't want to overgeneralize, but, you know, there's a lot of gay people working
it's a safe place for them.
In the service industries. And so she saw it kind of decimate her world. And in an odd way, it kind of took me by surprise because in my head, I was telling the story of Frankie and the people she met. And then I suddenly realized as I was writing it, I was like, oh, she's working in restaurants. We've just bumped into the AIDS epidemic.
Mm-hmm,
so it has to show up in the book because
it's happening.
It's happening around her. And it would be weird if Frankie was just chopping onions for the 80s and didn't notice
doesn't read the news.
That something awful was happening to her waiting staff.
What you did, which was quite different to the treatment of it, because sometimes when we watch fictional or read fictional versions of it, it's all consuming. Whereas here, the New Yorkers are still quite happily going to the restaurants and pretending it doesn't affect them.
Which is so, because actually when you start reading about it, because normally what happens is if you read history, you read about the one thing.
Yeah.
So you read about the AIDS epidemic and it's everything. It's about ACT UP, da 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 da. But actually, if you read another book, it's all about Studio 54. It's about the pyramid. Da, da. So
that's
all
right.
That was happening at the same time. Those hugely successful big nightclubs. So it wasn't like it was all. And I remember this in London. It wasn't all doom and gloom, you know, because you're young. So weirdly, as traumatic as it was, you've still found. You still had that young thing in you.
Yeah.
So you were still going out. You were still having a laugh. You were still partying. And then it was like people just fell off the edge of a cliff. You just like, oh, where's Brian? Oh, he went back to his family. He's sick. And I thought Russell T Davies captured that so well in It's a Sin.
It's a Sin, yeah.
That thing where people vanished. They just went. And it wasn't like, because you didn't nurse people. You didn't really visit people in hospitals. They vanished. And that happens a little bit in this book.
Yes, you get us a few times here in this story.
I did the audiobook and there's an awful thing in the audiobook where this is so bad. I made myself cry. And you're just like, oh, somebody shoot me. This is so awful. God, look at him. He's moved himself.
This is only you criticizing him. No one has said this. Yeah. It's all again.
So sad. Shut up.
So at this stage, Frankie has, we've shades of the English patients because we've got Damien kind of chatting to her. Brooklyn is in there a little bit. Julia Child, I think, because of all the cooking. The Heart's Invisible Furies, because of what we just discussed. And Patricia Highsmith, because we haven't really discussed the catty lesbians. It's a bit of a spoiler.
Oh, yes.
But there are some terribly evil lesbians. A lot happens to Frankie. And she's kind of, she's a little bit passive at times. We try to be balanced in this show.
No, I think a lot of people live their lives like this. You know, stuff happens to them. And she finds success. She does find success. She kind of falls into her groove and that's all good. The thing that interested me was an older person looking back. And I think it's, Damien sees a lot of her, the fact that she's looking back and remembering happiness, as he sees it as sad. He thinks it's kind of depressing.
Yeah.
And she goes, no, this is great that I can look back and appreciate what I had. And I think it's, I'm only in my 60s now, but even now I'm kind of going, oh, aren't I lucky that I have that memory? Isn't that great that that happened? Rather than what a shame, you know, I can no longer... I can no longer run downstairs.
Yeah, you know you're not going to be in your 20s.
Exactly.
But you're quite happy to sit with that.
And to remember it and kind of go, oh, that's a lovely thing to remember, but I'm quite glad I don't have to do it again.
Congratulations on coming out as in your 60s, because I presume there are bars where people in their 60s together hang out and various industries that are not working together.
Yeah, they serve Complan, pints of Complan.
It's still a young age, though, isn't it? You're a very youthful...
So
something.
Youthful, Oliver. It's incredible.
So you sound like you don't believe that. Such a writer.
Hanging on.
Again, I love how there are tips in the book from Frankie, such as the peach oil on light bulbs.
Yes, that's from, do you know the actor Natasha McElhone?
I know the name, yeah.
Very beautiful. She's been in lots of things. She does that.
That's where I got that from. It's a bit out of date now, unfortunately, because the heat bulbs probably the light bulbs don't really heat up as much anymore.
Yes.
Do they?
Yeah, very good point. You're so young.
not really.
Yeah. And, you know all about light bulbs.
I knew the thing about rubbing garlic on toasted bread. I mean, sure, that's it's a lovely tip.
Everyone knows that.
But unfortunately, you're not into cooking as much as you're not conceding that you're into it. What other things are you in? What do you do to relax other than working all the time?
There's wine.
There is that.
I do drink the wine. I mean, listen, I do cook. I don't sit at home kind of going, if only there was food. I do get up and make some food every now and again. But I wouldn't, yeah. Like, I always think if you go to a dinner party, just be glad someone cooked for you. Don't, you know, it doesn't matter what it is. That's my attitude to cooking, is I'm going to feed you. Just be grateful you're being fed. And if it's disgusting, don't eat it and find something on the way home.
What would you be cooking for your guests?
Bet you a pot of something. Just glop.
Very little detail. Is there meat involved? Is there...
No. Well, at home, I'm married to a vegan. So at home, it's all vegan. Unless I have this weird thing where if you're over a certain age, I feel I can't ask you to eat a vegan dinner. So if it's people, kind of younger people coming to dinner, I'm quite happy to I'll just do a vegan spread for you. You've eaten vegan food before. But if they're older, I feel it's a bit cruel.
What's the cutoff age?
As I'm saying it, I don't know. Because I did give some people over 70 some vegan food recently.
Oh, wow.
But by and large, I feel like, I don't know, I think you've lived this long. They won't understand.
There's no point in
They'll just
vegan.
Think, this isn't dinner. And which I think young people, they get it.
No meat, no meal kind of age, isn't it? That's the age. You mentioned your husband there is a vegan. Now, he's Scottish as well. We're like, oh, thank God. A bit like Saoirse Ronan, who's married. They've married someone British. Oh, he's Scottish. It's going to be okay.
Yes, Scottish.
He's still one of us.
We're allowed.
I noticed in the Irish Times when they asked you about your husband, I've lost the line here, but it's something like a note of reticence creeps into your voice when discussing it.
It does, because I feel it's always a bit weird when one person in a relationship gets to talk about it. And in the past... that hasn't gone well. So, you know, as I get older, hopefully I learn. I'm learning. So shut up, Graham.
These are in your memoirs pre-novel, which are The Life and Loves of a He-Devil. Is one
yes.
of them.
Yeah.
And some people didn't take too kindly to being referenced.
Oh, no. That whole book, I'll tell you now, was written... this is terrible to say. I wrote that book for two reasons. One, I wrote that book to get my novel deal.
Yeah, yeah.
So I said, I'll write a memoir.
This is the one the publisher wants you to do.
Yeah, they want the memoir, but I'll do the memoir if you give me a novel deal.
Oh, right.
And then I wrote that whole book and didn't mention someone in it because I knew it would drive them insane.
That is the best way. Don't mention them at all. You had to write two memoirs, in fact, to get to the novel, is it?
No. Well, the first novel, the first memoir I just wrote as a memoir. They said, please write a memoir. I'm like, thank you very much. And I did. And then about 10 years later, they came sniffing around again for another memoir. And of course, I'd done nothing. You know, in those 10 years, like, I don't know if you noticed, but like when you read a memoir, they're really only interesting until the person becomes successful.
Yes. Okay.
And then after that, you know what happens.
Yes, you do. Yeah, we follow the story.
Like the interesting bit of my life, I live on television. Mm. You know, I met Cher. Yeah, we know you did because I sat down on Friday and watched it. You know, it would be an anecdote if I wasn't working on television and I bumped into Cher in a restaurant. But it's no, I you saw that. So, so I felt like my life in terms of, you know, writing a memoir was interesting till I got to telly, and then, you know, you've seen the rest. So when I came to do the second one, I thought, well, I can't just tell the story of my life. So that's why I wrote those kind of essays about the things that I love.
And funny things that happen and so on. Yeah, and that gave you the license to do the things you wanted, which are the novels.
Which, and you know, at that point, I didn't know whether they'd be any good, if people would read them. But, you know, here we are, book five.
But back to your husband, because you've kept things nice and private, haven't you? We didn't even know you were married for a while. So privacy is very important to you, I would imagine, when you are so famous.
It's that weird... David Hyde Pierce said a really good thing. He said, my life's an open book, but I choose not to read it aloud. And so that's what I would say. My life is an open book, but I choose not to read it aloud.
There's a lovely quote. I don't know if you read Salman Rushdie's Knife memoir.
Yes.
Where he talks about privacy and how he says it's a thing. The idea of privacy has kind of become absurd and not to be valued and thrown away. And the idea that there's a whole generation now where if they haven't shared it online, it hasn't happened, including things like weddings and intimate moments in their life.
Well, I think the thing is, if you share all the great stuff, if you share your, you know, your tanned feet on the Maldives and you share the incredible wedding cake and you share all that stuff, no life's all that. So then you're left having to share the awful things.
True, yeah.
You're having to share the, you know, your house flooding. You have to share being broken into. You have to share a divorce. You have to share a death. And actually, you can't pick and choose. Once you've opened that door, you can't really shut it.
Otherwise it's fake.
Well, but also people won't let you. You know, you've exposed yourself in that way. So, so I don't want to.
51551 again is the text. I was about to text that I think the greatest compliment I could pay Graham is that I never think of him while reading his books. And now I have to, says Joe in Dublin 8. Oh, it was going so well.
Why does she have to? Now I have to. Now that you've talked to him.
Is that a worry of yours, by the way, that people are listening to you in their head as a reader?
It is. And like I said earlier, that was one of the reasons why I tried to extricate myself from the books. I do the audiobook, in which case, you know, you really are hearing my voice head. This book, I think this might be my last audiobook because I mean, there's a lot of accents in this book. And,
do you know them?
Although I trained as an actor... There's a reason I'm not doing it. There's a reason why I'm now a television presenter, not an actor. So the accents are quite ropey. And also, I'm not a professional actor. So, you know, when you interview professional actors about doing an audiobook, they talk about, you know, putting little coloured post-it notes on each page and colour coding it and knowing which voice appears when and da da da. Not me. I turn a page and go, what, they're from Switzerland? And then I read on. I go, oh, now they're talking. Now they've got to say something.
Was your Italian-American?
No, don't. It's so bad.
Love Graham's writing. For me, Home Stretch was his best work. I felt I knew the main character so well by the time I finished it. It has stayed with me. Looking forward to reading this next one. There's been one since then.
There has, yeah. But I'm with you. I liked Home Stretch too.
Oh, we've actually got a voice note from her name is Carmel. Is this Carmel who's read Home Stretch? So you might need your things in your ears. Yeah. It's about a minute long, so here we go.
Hi, Oliver. Hi, Graham. I just wanted to say that I have enjoyed Graham's books. And for me, Home Stretch was probably the most amazing of them. I thought the character Connor, he developed his character so much in the book. I felt I really knew him, and the book stayed with me. And the whole idea of the pain he endured and held on to all that pain for so long and could never come back home to Ireland. It was just amazing that you could create such a character. And I often wondered, was Graham part of that? Was that part of Graham, or was there a little bit of Graham in Connor's character? Just an interesting, I'd love to ask him that question. Thank you.
That's Carmel.
And now she has. Oh, Carmel. That was Carmel. Thank you very much, Carmel. That's kind of amazing when you hear like a book affected someone like that. So thank you very much. Was I Connor? Not really. I think the thing that I brought to Connor was that thing of coming home. Mm. You know, because Connor, like me, went away for a long time and didn't really notice that Ireland was changing. And so that was when, because again, in my head, it was just a plot thing. Connor had to come home and he was going to confront various secrets and da da da.
Yeah.
And then I realized, oh, actually, the world has changed. It was a bit like bumping into the AIDS epidemic in this book. I bumped into modern Ireland when Connor got off the plane. And so you had to deal with that. And I really enjoyed that bit of home stretch of him coming back to a far more liberal, tolerant society. Whereas, you know, when he left, he kind of had to leave.
Yeah. I heard on a podcast somewhere that Home Stretch is the one you're, I think, most proud of as well. Is that still...
It was. Actually, I think I would say Frankie is kind of... I don't know if it's a step up, but it felt like this is more ambitious in a way, it's not a book that relies on a plot twist or anything like that. It's
no murder.
Yeah, there's no murder. So it's a book that I wouldn't have tried. I wouldn't have been confident enough to write this book sort of 10 years ago when I started.
Wow.
I don't think.
That says it all, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, I don't know if I succeeded.
No, it is very, very good, in fairness. And even if it was terrible, we'd still have you on.
Thanks.
And we just wouldn't say it.
No, you'd still say it was good. I was my opinion is so meaningless. As a chat show host, I have never read a book I didn't like. I've never seen a film I didn't think was marvellous. Never heard a song I didn't love. And yet people still ask me for my opinion. And why are you doing that?
We're very different in this show. We never recommend. Actually, we don't recommend any bad books. We have interviewed someone who's written a bad book, but we would never name Richard Madeley out loud like that at all.
So poor bad. Richard.
So bad.
Have you read Judy's?
No, I haven't.
Oh, there you go. Oh.
So thank God this wasn't shite. Well done. Now, speaking of home, we have to ask you about Cillian Murphy, because obviously a very big year for Cork.
Has it, though? He
won the Oscar, of course, in March, and some people don't think he won it. Actually, Cork won the Oscar. So Cillian was actually on Morning Ireland, and he was asked, was he now the most famous Cork person, or was it Roy Keane or Graham Norton? And he said, I don't know how you'll feel about this. I'm directly quoting him. No one will be more famous than Roy Keane coming out of Cork. I'm a big Roy Keane fan. He'll always be number one for me. Sorry, Graham.
Well, charming. I've interviewed Cillian Murphy.
But not on the chat show.
No.
On radio.
On the radio. Now, whether he doesn't want to come on the chat show, which, you know, you're allowed to not want to come on the chat show. So maybe he doesn't want to come on. I don't know.
Roy Keane hasn't been on it either, has he?
No.
That's extraordinary.
And I haven't interviewed him on the radio either.
What? Roy Keane? I can't believe Roy Keane's not been on...
No, that is odd, isn't it? Yeah.
Considering you've had Paul O'Donovan, the O'Donovan brothers.
We from did. West Cork. Anyone else saw that it wasn't the brothers won the gold? I don't know.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
That would have been
lovely. You are the spokesman for West Cork in this situation, so.
I know. I just felt a bit
it's
bad.
Just how hard it is to get into the team.
I think the other one was busy or something. I don't know what he's doing.
Paul O'Donovan, of course, Ireland's greatest ever Olympian. He's got three medals, three separate. Wow. He got silver with his brother, of course.
He's I was in Skibbereen the other day. It is en fête, as they say. You'd think Skibbereen had hosted the Olympics.
That's just August.
And the opening parade on the river, it was lovely.
You will be back on the BBC Telly show, and
end of September, I'm back on. Yeah.
When I was looking it up, I was surprised. So it was 2007, was it? It started. There was a BBC Two version, was it?
Yeah. See, in my head, I just say 1998 because that was when So Graham Norton started.
Oh, I see.
And
okay.
I've kind of been
so
doing
26 years of chat show.
Yeah. So I've kind of been doing chat shows ever since then.
But the clean ones are from
2007. The clean ones are. What's weird is I do genuinely still enjoy it. When I sit down in that seat at the end of September, I will be looking forward to it. And if someone had told me 26 years ago, you'll still be doing this job in a quarter of a century and enjoying it, I'd have thought they were nuts. But it's true.
Because you did quote Dale Winton in the Irish Times interview, don't quit the hit.
Never quit the hit.
But does that kind of mean, like, if you're sick of the hit, you have to keep going?
Well, I think, look, I'm under no illusion. Like, the chat show gifts me the rest of my life. You know, these books happen because I have the chat show. The wine I do happens because I have the chat show. Everything else is because I have the chat show. Yeah. So that's kind of my proper job.
You're trapped at the chat show.
Well, it's my proper job. But if I stop enjoying it, or if an audience start not watching it, you know, then it is over. And again, it's that thing of looking back. I'm in my 60s. If the chat show stop tomorrow, how lucky am I that I got to do that for that long?
Lovely. Some final message before I let you go. I'm very interested to read Frankie and the Protestant theme. Always had a sense of otherness. Oh, this is actually from always had a sense of otherness growing up in Ireland in the late 50s.
Yes.
Well done, Graham, for all you've achieved in your writing. That's from Rosemary.
Good Protestant name.
Good Protestant. By the way, your stage name is Graham Norton. You were Graham Walker.
Graham Walker.
What
yes.
You just went for the other Protestant name.
Well, no, it was a kind of a family name, because I had to pick a name, and you know the temptation would be called Graham Run River High or something. So I rang my mother and we went through some names, and Norton was in there, and I thought that's. Same two syllables.
It's in the family anyway.
Yeah,
okay.
Graham Norton, yeah. And what was great was when So Graham Norton, the rudery of So Graham Norton on Channel 4 happened, of course, I was protecting my parents. People didn't know that I was their
son. Very good,
son.
Yes.
But there was a poor woman called Marie Norton who lived in Bandon. And God love her. People thought she'd spawned the devil child. I would look at her funny in the supermarket. So, sorry.
Absolutely love Graham's books. Looking forward to reading Frankie. That's from Kay in Limerick. Good morning. I love Graham's books and his gin. You've got gin as well.
Oh yeah, and vodka.
I was very lucky to meet him last year in London at a grant-making event, and he is so lovely.
Oh, I remember that. That was at the embassy, yeah.
So genuine and exactly like he is on television, an absolute legend, and that's from Evelyn.
I remember.
Name for a character as well, isn't it?
Oh yeah, yes, it is in some book.
So you're doing all of these things. Oh, sorry, book signings. That's what I have to do. Yes, I remember now to be presenter and do the... Frankie is in the shops today.
Today.
And Graham will be signing copies of his new novel, Frankie, in Easons on Patrick Street in Cork City this Friday at 4 p.m. It's a ticketed event and they're all gone. It's sold out.
Oh, is it?
Yeah,
oh.
Unfortunately.
So, well, thanks for reading it out anyway.
£16.99. So do you get a book?
Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure you get a book for
no
that.
No Hidden Oasis markups. And, but they are sadly sold out. But you're doing the book tour in England, but you're not doing it here.
I'm off to Galway tomorrow. So I'm doing two shows in Galway with Pauline McLean, but they're sold out. So you can't go to them. And am I announcing other book signings?
You know,
I'm doing kind of mystery stop. I'm doing surprise stops en route.
If you mention them now, they'll just be snapped up again.
And also, I don't know where they are.
will anyone know they happen? Wander around bookshops.
If a tree falls in the forest.
Well done on Frankie. It at times made me quite angry. And I sobbed a little bit.
Oh, good.
Just enough to kind of dampen the top cornflake, you know. But it was a really good read. And thank God it was good.
Okay, now that I know that you slag off books, I'm very relieved.
I won't last here. Graham Norton, thank you so much.
Thank
and enjoy
you
your day
much.
Here. We're back after these.